Well, happy Thursday morning to you. Hope you have had just an absolutely splendiferous week, and we invite you now to enjoy a splendiferous time on Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone lines, and all the ways we have to communicate today, not the least of which being the old-style telephone, 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809. If email's your preferred means of communication, it's perspectives at WFSU.org, or you can tweet us at WFSU Perspective. Well, if you're thinking in terms of history, America has a whole bunch of wonderful stories, as we know, but many of these stories have not been adequately told. And an example that might actually be the kind of long and fascinating history of Florida's cattle culture. And that's a tale that might find its best expression in a new documentary that has been produced for PBS by Elam Stoltzfus and his son Nick, both from Bluntstown, Florida. The musical score, our good friend Jay Robert, and the film has multiple local premieres over the next few days. A VIP reception screening tonight at Tallahassee's Mission San Luis, public screenings tomorrow and Saturday evening also at the Mission. There's an accompanying book and a CD and a DVD and all kinds of different iterations of this incredible production, and it's also going to be shown on WFSU-TV, and we'll tell you about that in just a little bit. But let's get to the progenitors of this incredible magnum opus, Elam and Nick Stoltzfus. Elam, where did this idea come from? You guys have been collaborating on a lot of films over the years, but where did this whole cowboy Florida culture thing come from?
You know, I've heard about the cattle drives because a good friend of mine went on the 95, and it seems like every time I would see him, he'd always talk about the experience he had on the cattle drive and friends that he met. And that always stayed with me, and I would see it in the news and read articles. And I always thought, man, that would be a fun thing to do, be a fun project. But didn't really make the connection until it was the beginning of 2015. A friend of mine said, hey, you ought to do this documentary on the cattle drive. And he connected us to Doyle Connor Jr. And then it kind of went from there. You know, they had a committee that meets every month for almost 2 years to plan this. They're all volunteers that work on putting together the Great Florida Cattle Drive. So we went and did a presentation to them in the summer of last year. I think it was around July. And they said, come on board. So little did we know what we're getting into, but it was great. It was an incredible experience.
Well, most folks don't even know that there is such a thing as a Great Florida Cattle Drive. They certainly don't run the heifers down West Tennessee Street here in Tallahassee, and it takes place in more rural a part of the area, right, Nick?
Yes, it does. So the Great Florida Cattle Drive, you know, it's sort of like City Slickers. You know, you watch the movie and you have a lot of people, a lot like myself, who didn't grow up on a farm or a ranch, but are curious about this type of lifestyle in Florida cow culture. And so there are about 450, 500 people that were on this cattle drive and got to live like cowboys and cowgirls for a week. And sort of like that City Slickers kind of a feel to it.
Well, people might think that, oh, this is just part of, again, a reconstruction in Florida, just like Main Street USA down at Disney. I mean, that's not real. That's a make-believe kind of representation of something that we kind of see in our memories. But when it comes to Florida and cattle, we have a long, long history in that regard, right, Elam?
Yes, sir. 1521 is when the first cattle came here into Florida by Ponce de Leon and their direct descendants to Spain. And so here we are almost 500 years. And, you know, we were able to document this in the film and the book. And that was one of the challenging and kind of fun things that we did with the film, was to do this research and really begin to understand that what happened in the 1800s, like after the Reconstruction, the Civil War, the cattle industry is really what got the commerce going here in Florida, faster than some of the other states. And also some of the fortunes that some of the ranchers made are still with us today. These same families, the lineage and the wealth of the land they were able to purchase brought in this citrus industry, and just it kind of goes on and on. You can connect the dots. So it's a very rich history, and you know we need to tell this story. It's very, very important because it's who we are.
Yeah, we think of Florida, particularly North Florida, in terms of cotton plantations and that pre-Civil War kind of agricultural economy that we had. We don't think of cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you guys were able to peel back the layers of that onion through the modern day cattle drive to see just how significant this was to the entire history of the state.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So and that's, you know, one of the interesting things when you're dealing with history and the history of cattle coming into Florida and all throughout the New World is when the Spanish and other Europeans came over, they also bring with them New World diseases. And so, you know, anytime with history, you have winners and losers. And so when the cattle first came in, of course, they brought all this new livestock. Well, what does livestock has? It also has diseases, that sort of thing. And so really the Native American population in Florida, you know, the new diseases just wipe them out, like all across the rest of North America and South America. And so it took a while for the Native Americans after the Spanish and other Europeans were here. But then eventually the Native Americans, the Seminoles, became caretakers of the cattle. And they had thousands of livestock around Payne's Prairie. So during the 1700s, the Seminoles were actually the caretakers of the cattle here in Florida.
That's amazing because we go today whizzing by I-75, mm-hmm. right straight through Payne's Prairie down mm-hmm. there outside of Gainesville. We think, oh, this is sort of an interesting place, but we don't give it much thought. But it is really critical to this entire cattle culture.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, as next time you're down around UF, that area, you'll see Micanopy was actually a Seminole chief, and Payne was also a Seminole chief. So, you know, they have left their mark in that area.
We think of today cattle in enclosed areas, fenced off meadows, grasslands, that sort of thing. But back in the day, it was a more free-ranging. We didn't really have fences back then, right, Elon?
Right. You think about the book that Patrick Smith wrote, A Lance Remembered, the McGivey family and how they would drive their cattle from St. Augustine all the way to place around Port Charlotte, and that's where they would ship the cattle out to Cuba. That was the main market. So, but you think about that family and the pioneer spirit and the hardship that they had and things they learned in Florida. It was a whole new way of handling cow culture and agriculture. So you have these unique ways of managing it. Like an example, here in Florida, they really weren't known as cowboys. They were called cow hunters. Why cow hunters? So you think about when you go into an area that has real thick palmettos and you put the cracker cow in there, you have to go hunt it. And that's also where the whip came from, because the whip was what the sound of it is how they were able to round up their cattle. They didn't use lassos. They didn't have fences. And so, yeah, you had that free range. And then also another important animal in rounding up their cattle was the cur dog. So what they say, like one cur dog's worth about 10 cowboys, I think is what somebody had said. So you think about how that evolved and, you know, still the impact of all the cattle here in Florida. And especially when you think about the fast growth of Florida, well, we're here 20 million people and we all still need something to eat, but yet still you have, I like to call it the heartland of Florida. You know, we have the Kissimmee River, you have the Kissimmee Basin, you have all the ranch land around there all the way to the east and the west on Highway 60. Yet most people go back and forth there and have no idea that there's cowboys or cow hunters still there.
Cow hunters. I had never heard that term before. That and the development of the horse culture around the Ocala area, I imagine, would have some connection to that culture, too. The cow hunters had to ride on something, right?
Mm-hmm. So actually, also along with cracker cows, you have other livestock that the Spanish would have brought over. So that would be cracker horses. And then they actually have something called cracker sheep. And there's a gentleman named Ralph Wright, and he's the president of the Cracker Sheep Association. And from what he has told me, cracker sheep have a really good like digestive tract, and they can handle parasites better than most sheep can across North America. And the cracker sheep, just like the cracker horse and the cracker cow, have been here for hundreds of years, and they have gotten accustomed to Florida parasites and bugs and diseases and the weather. Whereas, you know, even during the Seminole Wars, you have the American quarter horse coming down into the Everglades looking for the Seminoles. And so the American soldiers would have these big, basically like the tanks of a horse, the American quarter horse, you know, trying to find the Seminoles. And the Seminoles had cracker horses, which are these light, agile, quick-footed or quick-hoofed horse. And so they were able to quickly maneuver throughout the swamp. And so they're accustomed to that, whereas the quarter horse was not as accustomed to Florida weather.
It was like the Abrams tank of the horse world. It didn't work too good in the swamps, right?
Right, right. Absolutely. That's exactly the analogy you can use.
We're talking to Elam and Nick Stoltzfus, who have put together an incredible film documenting the Great Florida Cattle Drive, its modern-day version, but something that goes back in our Florida history for hundreds and hundreds of years. That film is getting a debut tonight with a VIP reception at Mission San Luis here in Tallahassee, and then also premieres coming up tomorrow and Saturday evening at the Mission. It's also going to be shown on WFSU-TV, premiering this evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and also on February 25th at 6, and February 26th at 2 p.m. So there's two showings there, the 25th and the 26th. It'll start airing around the state starting on February 19th and 26th on other public TV stations around the state of Florida. Your input is always welcome, as is Consistent on Perspectives at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 if long distance between you and us. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. And we're going to hear a selection of music from this incredible documentary film coming up in just a few moments right here on Perspectives. Great Florida Cattle Drive, Unbroken Circles, the new PBS documentary from Elam and Nick Stoltzfus, the father-son production team here. Is he an okay guy to work with, Elam?
Oh, yeah. You know, when he first came to work with me, he said, okay, Dad, am I working for you or with you? So I thought about that a little bit. I said, okay, let's put it this way. I said, when we get started, I think you're going to work for me. But I think we're at the with stage now.
It's gone from employee to collaborator, right?
Right.
Okay, that's a good thing. Ed joins us on line one. Let's get his call in here first on Perspectives. Hi, Ed.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, we're doing real well. Thanks for calling.
Good. I was involved in the interpretation of Mission San Luis, and that I did the interpretive paintings before anything was built. And one portion of the story of Mission San Luis is the rancheros that were established in the surrounding area that were cattle farms, in a sense, that fed the mission, and also that they would take the beef back over to St. Augustine, too, along the Spanish Trail, and then they would also ship it out of St. Mark's. And actually, we know that there's one close to Lake Jackson that was there. And so there's a real history, even in here in Leon County, along with the rest of Florida. And I'm glad that this film's been made because, as was brought up, people know very little about this period of time. And when I was at the Cartersville, Georgia Booth Western Museum there, which is up just outside of Atlanta, they focus upon the cattle industry. And one area they brought up that it was the one of the first industries that was established in the New World in terms of the cattle industry. It even predates California a little bit. So there's nobody really focusing upon it because it's been overlooked.
Well, Ed, thank you so much for documenting the history of Mission San Luis. I have certainly seen your work many times during my multiple visits to the mission, and appreciate your joining in on this conversation here too. Did that surprise you that the cattle became so much of an integral part in that whole mission culture that we had way back in the day of Florida?
No, it didn't surprise me because I was for years I was the museum artist for the Museum of Florida History, so I had a background already in it when I came up to it to do that particular commission. But I'm surprised that it's so overlooked, and I think the mission site right there, Mission San Luis, is a perfect place for perhaps the cattle industry maybe to underwrite a program where they exhibit one of the cattle typical for what the Spanish bred in this area, and could use that particular state park as a point of teaching the public, you know, because they only have chickens there, and that mission site was full of animals.
That's right. Let's see if we can prevail maybe on the cattle industry here in Florida, and maybe through the cooperation of the Department of Agriculture. I keep thinking of that Fresh from Florida logo again. And there were particular types of cattle, as you were saying, Elam and Nick, that were indigenous to this area that maybe you couldn't find in other parts of the country. There's some illustrations here in the book version of this that show, by comparison of sizes and everything, the different type of cattle that we had. Thanks for the call, Ed. Really appreciate that.
I know when Nick was doing the research and we started drawing the maps that are in the book, I was surprised to see how many cattle were in this area, Tallahassee, St. Marks, and the connection of St. Marks to St. Augustine, and even St. Marks all the way down to Cuba. And so you may want to talk about that some, Nick, on your research. But before you do that, one of the things that we learned from the Seminoles, and I found this really interesting, they said that they were doing cattle trading on longboats to Cuba probably like in the 1700s and early 1800s, long before the Europeans showed up here in Florida.
Really? I thought that was purely a European trade.
First the cattle would have come over, you know, the Spanish would have brought the cattle over, and then you would have hide, tallow, beef jerky, that sort of thing. And then the Seminoles would have gone in their longboats to Cuba and would have taken it over. And so, and again, that's also a forgotten history, but that's part of Seminole oral tradition. And Alex Johns and his uncle Willie Johns, they both talked about it to us in our conversations and interviews with them.
You could actually make a longboat transport from Florida to Cuba.
I had that wrong. I said before the Europeans came up, the cattle were already here. So it would have been more like the 1600s or 1700s. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I can't imagine making that kind of journey in those kind of craft. That's with cows on board.
Not cows, cattle products.
Products, all right. Tallow, not the entire cow.
But, yes.
Oh, my Lord. That's still, I can't imagine doing that. Mm-hmm. Talk about the folks who today are the successors of the early cracker cow hunters, if you will. Elam, what are those folks like? They still retain a lot of that same grit and gravel that maybe the old folks did?
I think so. I mean, like, one of the things that's always interesting to be around them, they have these like cowboyism sayings. It's like the way they see things and think about things. And I think that comes from spending a lot of time outdoors, riding a horse, sometimes not having anybody or very few people to talk to. So you have time to think, and they see things a little differently. And I like to hear their opinion because it's really kind of almost refreshing. They take their time, and, you know, one of the things I really, really enjoy about this project is the people. Relationships, friendships are one of the most important things. Like, if you say you're going to do something, then they expect you to do it. And that's trust. And that's what we had in this project. And that's what I cherish the most, is the relationships and friendships and the trust we build with these group of people.
Well, beyond those character qualities you're talking about, these folks were also phenomenally skilled and remain so when it comes to things, well, like whip craft. I remember seeing many years ago a Cracker Cowboy whip demonstration that just left everybody with their jaws on the floor. These folks could work magic with those, not just making the noise of the whip to control the cattle, but some of the tricks that they can do with it. Did you see any of that in the course of your filming there, Nick?
At the ranch rodeo that they have in Kissimmee, Florida, this happens around October of every year, they have like a whip demonstration. And it was really neat. One of the most fascinating things, and I don't think I've ever seen this before, is they had a competition for it. And there was this one young man, he had a whip in each hand, and he was actually almost doing like a rhythm or a beat, like pa pa da da pa 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 da pa 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 pa. And it was almost like, you know, if you have like river dance, whatever, and you have the heels that they make the noise. It was a lot kind of that cadence and rhythm. And I'd never seen or heard anything like that. And that was fascinating.
That's control.
Yeah.
That's crazy. We are talking, if you're just joining us here on Perspectives, to Elam and Nick Stolfus, who have put together this phenomenal PBS documentary on the Great Florida Cattle Drive, Unbroken Circles. And a big part of any film, of course, is the soundtrack. And there certainly is a fantastic soundtrack with an accompanying separate CD to the Great Florida Cattle Drive. And talk about first, before we hear the song, the guy who actually put this stuff together. Who is this guy, Nick?
Yeah, so J. Robert Hodling is a native Floridian, and his family has been here a really, really long time. And so I guess in his mind, he is a Florida cracker and comes from that ranching tradition. And so J. Robert is a Florida folk musician, and he's been at the Florida Folk Festival, you know, for years, playing fiddle and that sort of thing. And so we have worked with him in previous projects, and the sound that we wanted to have is a Florida folk sound. And so when we approached him about it, you know, that's what we were looking for in the film. And boy, did he deliver.
Let's hear a selection from the 14-track CD that forms the soundtrack of the Great Florida Cattle Drive, Unbroken Circles. And this is called the Unbroken Circle song.
Not long ago or far away, these are the days. Unbroken circles go on forever. Away, we're bound away. We shall gather by the river. Forgotten, away we're bound away. I can hear old folks talking. These are the days. I ride the heartland, swamps and prairies, away. Cow horse is a natural wonder. Away, we're bound away. Fast as lightning, strong as thunder. These are the days. Cracker cowboy and a Florida curl. Away, we're bound away. What you gonna do? cowboy with a yellow hammer herd. These are the days. Oh, precious times, your hand in mine, away. Unbroken circles go on forever, away. Yes, these are the days.
J. Robert Hodling, that is the Unbroken Circle Ballad, kind of the theme of the Great Florida Cattle Drive Unbroken Circles documentary, book, CD, DVD. It covers just about everything. And if you... kind of, boy, that banjo sounds familiar. I wonder who was playing that banjo. That's none other than John McEwen of Nitty Gritty Dirt Band fame. Talk about an all-star cast there. And J. Robert was also doing the harmonica on that. It sounds like you're there at the chuck wagon around the campfire. You've got the cattle out back, and you're going to drive them on the next day. But one final cup of coffee before you settle down for the night. It has that. Is that what the cattle drive is like, guys?
It was for me, actually. In the book, I talk about an experience I had being around the campfire. And there was a couple of guitar players, and they were passing the guitar around, you know, like you'd pass around some coffee or whiskey, whatever, just keep it on passing around. And every guitar player would have a different bit that they'd play. But one of the players played a famous ballad here in, you know, Florida cowhunter culture. And it's the Ballad of Bone Mizell. And he was a scurrilous Florida cow hunter, and it's the story of his rascalism, that sort of thing, out in the frontier. And Jim Bob Tinsley did the music for it. And so that was one of the interesting experiences I wrote about in the book.
Well, in the book, there's also it looks like an old guy from the backwoods. He's about as grizzled and down home as it gets. Mm-hmm. Doyle Connor Jr., the son of the former longtime agriculture commissioner for the state of Florida, Doyle Connor Sr. What was his connection to all this, Elon?
Doyle Connor Jr. was the chairman for the first cattle drive. The way he tells the story, that there was some discussion. Of course, most of his dad was very concerned about the cracker cattle. There wasn't many of them left, because what had happened is they wanted bigger beef, heavier beef, so they started crossing the cracker cattle with Brahma and other different breeds. And so as that started happening, the original cattle was almost bred out of existence. I think what they were down to like a couple hundred mm-hmm. at one time. And so Doyle Connor Sr., the commissioner, was very concerned about this. So he asked the Florida Cattlemen's Association to get involved in this and help find some cattle. And those are the cattle now that are out there on Capitol Circle Northeast, out there behind the prison, the federal prison. So a family donated those. And then out of that became a great interest. And I think today there's about 3,000 head of cracker cattle. And
6,000.
6,000. Okay, yeah. Way to go.
Wow, okay.
And they also have a certification on that. So and just a little aside, there is a group and a movement of trying to get the cracker cow certified as the heritage breed for the state of Florida. We got the horse, but not the cow.
Yeah.
So let's get that job done. Let's get the cracker cow certified as the historical cow for Florida.
And to have that designation heritage formally put in the plaza level of the state capitol downtown. So
there you go.
Along with the state mammal and all these other kinds of things. Okay, well, talk about endangered species. What about our cracker cow hunters? How many of those are left? I mean, you could say are authentic. They're not, latter day. Any way to find out?
I don't know off the top of my head. I definitely know the cow hunters who would be a part of the Great Florida Cattle Drive would be interested in preserving Florida cow culture and sharing it with visitors, tourists, that sort of thing. So if you're looking for the, you know, quote unquote authentic Florida cracker cow hunters, you know, going on the Great Florida Cattle Drive would be a great place to find them.
Yeah, but it's not like they have a formal association and an office full of lobbyists in downtown Tallahassee. It's not that type of thing, right?
No.
No, but you do have the Florida Cattle Association, Cattlemen's Association, and they're very interested in keeping their history alive. And that's part of how this all started, because they want this story to be remembered. And as well as the heritage of the cattle families are really rich. There's 6, 7, 8 generations that they've been here in Florida in the cattle industry. And they're very proud of their history. It's very, very important to them.
Well, the fact that you were able to capture this in documentary form has got to be really a big part of bringing this story to light and to life for people who don't even realize that this sort of thing still exists today. You might look back in a history book and say, oh, yeah, the Spanish brought cows, big deal. But this is a very integral part of old Florida that you guys have put in a documentary form that now the entire world's going to see.
Yeah. So actually, Tom, this is a really cool story about, you know, here we are talking about history, but Tom, we couldn't have told this story even 10 years ago the way that we did now. And the reason being is just in the last 10 years, technology and camera equipment has gotten lighter and lighter and more powerful. So Dad had the camera on the back of the horse.
Ooh, technical stuff. I want to hear this. The horse rear end camera shot coming up right here on Perspectives, talking to Elam and Nick Stoltzfus, who put together the Great Florida Cattle Drive Unbroken Circles documentary. More on that to come right here on Perspectives. Fantastic documentary here on the Great Florida Cattle Drive and the cow culture of old Florida and also new Florida. Let's face it, the amount of beef that Americans consume may have moderated a bit in comparison to the 50s or 60s, but people still love their cows on a plate. Elam and Nick talking about the way that they put this documentary film together, which gets its premiere in Tallahassee tonight, Mission San Luis, with a VIP reception and public screenings also at the Mission tomorrow and Saturday night as well. And we'll tell you how to find out more about that. Well, you can go to WFSU.org. We've got all kinds of information about that there. But talk about the since I know we got some folks from the film school that are listening in to us now, guys. They're going, how'd you shoot this thing? it's not like the old, the Cinerama cameras, you remember those behemoths, or even the 35mm cameras that used to be a staple with Hollywood. You guys went high tech on this puppy, right, Elam?
We did. So, you know, one of the questions, how do you ride a horse and hold a camera? So we used the Sony, some of the DSRs, as well as a 4K, FS5. It's a broadcast camera. And of course, then on top of that, it was cold and rainy. So we had our challenges and our work cut out for us. But I really wanted that perspective of what is it like to be ingrained in the middle of all the cow hunters moving the cattle. So I wanted it from the perspective of a rider. So you have a lot of horses' ears in the shots where the cattle are moving. So sometimes you have a lot of backs of the cowboys in front of you. But I tried to shoot some stuff going back too. So then you have the back end of the horse in the shot. But we shot a lot of footage and tried to write the story off of that and got some great interviews, had some great help. So a lot of times we had three cameras going, and we had a GoPro as well, but we didn't use that a whole lot. But just trying to capture those moments was a challenge. And of course, when you come back, you still feel like you didn't have enough. But you know, as a producer and writer and editor, you try to pull all the pieces together. So we were fortunate to have lots of pieces of the puzzle on the table.
Well, that's it. In digitized format, how much did you have there, Nick, in terms of total digitization of these images here?
Right. So by the time we went back to the studio and had the shots from the drones and the cameras and all that, we had 43 terabytes worth of 4K video footage. Now, to put that in a scale, I have my 120 gigabyte iPhone in front of me, and that is approximately 233 120 gigabyte iPhones.
And for those of us who do editing for a living, we know that the more raw stuff you have, the longer it takes you to find the best parts of it and winnow it down to something that tells a story, that has compelling imagery, and all of that. So how long did the editing on this thing take, Elam?
I probably did it in about 3 months. I think, I mean, you know, one thing that we do is we work together. Our studio is at home. We own our own equipment. And so we start out by writing a series of short videos, 3-4 minutes that we were putting on social media. So that's kind of a fun way to start getting into it and start kind of testing it. And you're putting out, you start watching the responses, you know, what are people saying about what you're putting together. And some of those pieces in its entirety were moved right into the film. Of course, one of the things that Nick does, he transcribes every interview and then works out of that, like cut and paste to form the script. I shot just about all the footage, so I knew what I had. Nick did all the interviews, so he knew all the questions. So it was the two of us worked really close on designing and putting the film together. I mean, we have many other people involved, but we were the core of shooting and writing for the film.
And over the course of the Great Florida Cattle Drive, we're talking how much time and how many miles did you guys document here?
Sure. So actually, we were embedded the entire way. We did not go to a hotel at night and take showers. I went a week without a shower. Probably didn't smell the best. But, you know, that was our whole purpose, is to be embedded the entire time. So we slept in a tent, even though it had rained 3 inches over the course of 4 days. And we had to put up our tents in the mud and in the cow mess, all that. We were there just like everybody else, which was also part of our experience. But the cattle drive was a week long, and it was 50 miles, and we were there for every single mile of it.
Oh, man. Well, no matter how bad you smelled, the cows probably smelled worse. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
Still, this is – it is fascinating how you were able to capture a segment of something that most people just never even imagine, much less experience. You got to have a million really cool stories out of this. What was the most, I guess, the most unexpected thing that happened in the course of that week, Elam?
Well, for me, it was we had an assistant, Savannah Montero, and she's from a ranch in Nevada. She's used to riding horses. So one day she had the GoPro, and we, like Nick had said, it rained a lot, and so the creeks were high, and we're crossing a creek, and her horse went down, and she lost her phone and the GoPro. So she felt bad, and she started having tears in her eyes. I'm so sorry, I lost your camera. I said, don't worry about it. Are you okay? She says, well, yours is what's important. So I got to get you back to your mom and dad, right? So we started looking in the creek, and so we were towards the beginning of 500 people on horses riding across this creek. So here we stop, and I go back in the water, and it's about waist deep. Of course, this is February, so it's nice and cool. Everybody that's come along there is watching us and say, oh, what happened? It's like, just let me look for the camera. So I spent about 20 minutes, half hour, and eventually found the camera, the GoPro, but we didn't find the iPhone. So anyway, kind of fast forward. So it's about 2 months later, we were down with the Seminole tribe in Brighton and doing some research and interview. And then we walked in. One of them says, yeah, we heard you guys lost this big broadcast camera in a creek. Wow, how'd you guys do that? You know, I said, yeah, I kind of laughed and said, yeah, that was us. I said it was a GoPro.
The camera that got away. Yeah. It sort of grew as the story went there. How about you, Nick? What did you find interesting about this?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the difficult things is we have all this equipment. We try to keep it dry. I mean, thank goodness for Pelican cases. But by Wednesday night, it had rained already 2 days then and having to set up camp. And I was not in the best of moods, and I actually write about it a little bit in the book about my weakness. And so I was not in the best mood. I'd set up my tent, and it was still raining, and my boots were wet. And, you know, I was pretty much my low point for the drive. Well, get to supper. They had a hot meal ready for us, and that helped warm up my spirits. And then they had three cowboy poets come in, and Stephen Monroe was one of them who lives here in Tallahassee and who's on the film. And that just, you know, their stories and kind of making fun of the whole process and the culture was it helped to boost my spirits too. So that low point, I managed to try to find a way to transform it and kind of look at it in a different light and realize it's not quite so bad.
A little bit more philosophical approach to life.
Right.
I got to ask you guys, would you do this again, maybe under different circumstances, given advances in technology, which we know is going to be happening here even over the next 5 years or so, and go back and a redo or a re-imaging of this?
The term would be re-imaging, and let me explain. So we talked about 1521. What's 500 years on that? 2021, that's just around the corner. So one of the plans is to do a major, and I said major, cattle drive across Florida to celebrate those 500 years in 2021. So if you want to go, get in line. We're going to have a major cattle drive in 2021. And that's part of this project, is starting to lay the groundwork for that project.
When you say across Florida, I take it this is not going to be just a week and 50 miles then, huh?
I don't know yet.
Yeah.
Well, because it's a big state. We're more than 800 miles from Pensacola down to Marathon. So I don't know. That could be a heck of a heck of a haul here. What do you think is beyond the fact that you have captured just such a remarkable piece of history and to a phenomenal group of people who exemplify and are making living this history here. Beyond the fact we still like our hamburgers and sirloins, what's the significance of this whole thing today? Is there any?
Yeah, so I think the significance, there's several different things. So the cracker cattle, there's only about 6,000 left, and they're monitored by the Livestock Conservancy. So, you know, you have like say with vegetables and fruit, you have heirloom breeds, that sort of thing. So, you know, you have your big tomatoes that you can get at the store, that sort of thing. But then there are these strange, interesting heirloom breeds that, you know, might just be little small tomatoes or different things that you keep for the genetics. And I think from the scientific perspective, maintaining an heirloom breed or heritage breed, and maintaining that genetic strain, it's always one of those things you want to kind of not just have your eggs in one basket, but you have it have that strain for future. If there ever is a disaster or something happens, that you maintain that. So that's, I guess, the scientific point of view. But then also you have the cultural point of view of Florida history and heritage of, you know, Florida. If you just look back 100, 150 years ago, you know, we didn't have near as many people as we do now, which is upward of 20 million. And so I think to have this sort of living history, you know, which a lot of pioneer settlements, that sort of thing, do across the state of Florida, is people who are from, say, Michigan or New York, or even visitors from Germany or Japan who come to Florida. It's not just about the theme parks or the beaches, which are wonderful. They bring people to our state. But you also find out a little bit about what Florida might have been like 150, 200 years ago. And I think this is a part of that, sharing Florida's culture and heritage with others.
And I'm thinking that beyond the genetic heritage of the cattle we're talking about,
right,
what about the cultural and the character of those cowboys or cow hunters that you were talking about, Elam, that honesty, that ability to kind of cut through the BS, if you will, to find what is real in the world that so many of us have kind of lost.
That's real interesting. And one of the things that Nick was talking about, the history. So one of the things I'd like to share a little bit about is what's the future for ranchers, cowboys, and for some of these cattle. One of the things I do know that a movement across Florida, and I'm very excited about this, is some of the ranchers are working hard to market their grass-fed beef locally. And that's really starting to catch on. So the Cracker Cow may play an important part of that. And there's a few of them that are already doing that and are marketing the Cracker Cow, where you can come in and buy your own cow and then get it processed locally. And that makes a lot of sense instead of moving all the cattle out to Oklahoma and Texas, which happens now. And that's what we want. That's what especially the younger people, or Generation X, they want to know, or the millennials, I guess is what they call them, is they want to know where their meat comes from, where their food comes from. And that's what this is all about. So if you do it locally, if you have a ranch, a good example is the Adams Ranch. They're marketing through Whole Foods in the Fort Pierce area. Their meat's not coming up here or somewhere else, but they're trying to find that region. And that makes a lot of sense. And I'm excited about that. And I think that's one of the movements or the future for beef here in Florida.
We're seeing more of that, the little boutique farms now. What, there's more than 30 local farms, I think, that are part of that tour that like New Leaf Market, you know, puts together on an annual basis that people can go out. And we're kind of getting back to that family-produced livelihood, whether it's, you know, vegetables or now cattle.
And it makes perfect sense for these families because that's what they've always done. They've tried to take care of what they have and trying to make a living off the land and their cattle. And so now they're doing that again, just in a kind of a modern way of selling their products.
I take it you guys are really happy with the way this turned out. I could just tell.
Yeah, we are. We've assembled an excellent team, and you know, actually Dad and I were talking about that on the way over here. It's like when you're running a race, you have people along the sides that are cheering you on, you know, go for it, go for it. And so with this project, we've had phenomenal sponsors. We've had partners like, say, here at WFSU as a presenting station. And then the people who we interviewed and we worked with, this is their story. You know, Dad grew up Amish in Pennsylvania, and I didn't grow up in a farmer ranch. And so this isn't necessarily our story per se, but, you know, the cowboys, they open up their hearts, their homes, and they share their story with us. And that's a gift. And so for them to share that with us and for us to be able to, I guess, be a megaphone for them, if you will, and share their story with the world, first they have to trust us. And that there's like a transformative power in trust of that level. And that's been really meaningful for me to be a part of that.
You'll get to see this story here on WFSU TV, by the way. That's going to be coming up, Thursday, February 23rd at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Also be on WFSU on February 25th at 6 and February 26th at 2 in the afternoon. And we'll begin airing around the state on other public television stations starting on February 19th through the 26th. And those premieres will be happening as per their local listings. And here in Tallahassee, we have you guys going to be there for the VIP reception Mission San Luis tonight, right?
I guess so. Yeah, we'll be there.
Your dad's checking the calendar. So yeah, I think we're on for that. And then there will be public screenings also at Mission San Luis of the Great Florida Cattle Drive on Broken Circles tomorrow evening and also Saturday evening. And you can go to WFSU.org to get more information on that. And beyond the 2021 500th anniversary of all this, Elam, what's what next project for you guys?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, but I do want to put one plug in, just quick thank the sponsors, and that's Department of Fresh from Florida, Florida Cattlemen's Association and their foundation, Blackbeard Ranch, Vino and Sons, Arrowhead Ranch and Lefty's Dirt Road at the Yoder family and Bulldog Strategy.
Oh, that's Sandy Parada person. Yeah, know her well. Know her well. We also are going to be taking a selfie very shortly with Flossie the cow out in our lobby. And if anyone is over off of Potsdamer and wants to also get a selfie with Flossie the cow, along with Queen Victoria, you can do that in our lobby too. So, guys, we're going to go out and take a picture here in just a moment. Elam and Nick Stolzfus, thank you so much for this great labor of love, the Great Florida Cattle Drive, Unbroken Circles. Can't wait to see the final product, guys.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee, Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls on the technical side of the equation. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week on Perspectives, our yearly deep dive into the wonderful world of honeybees with members of the Appalachian Beekeepers Association. So buzz on by next week on Thursday's Perspectives. We'll see you then.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.